Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust excellence built on 40 years of experience. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more about the Zurich Master Trust.
Thank you very much indeed for that, Ruth. Now, children have been let down by a lack of research and remarkably weak evidence on medical interventions in gender care, according to a UK review. The CAS review, which looked at gender identity services for under-18s in the UK, was published today by paediatrician Dr. Hilary Cass. Here, the health service executive says that a new clinical programme for gender healthcare is being initiated and over the next 2 years will develop an updated clinical model of care for gender healthcare services. It says a CAS report will be reviewed as part of this work. The HSE also said that fewer than 10 patients of Children's Health Ireland are currently receiving puberty blockers. We're joined now by endocrinologist Professor Donal O'Shea, who treats transgender people at St Cullen Kills Hospital in Loughlinstown. You're very welcome, Professor O'Shea, to the programme. What are your impressions of the CAS report?
Well, it's a very welcome report. It's very comprehensive. It's over 380 pages long. And Hilary Cass has visited Ireland, our unit in Loughlinstown, met with the HSE leadership. And one of our consultants, Paul Moran, is on the CAS review group. So we've inputted into it. It's the most comprehensive report of its kind in recent years. And it kind of tells us what we knew from the interim report. This journey, done well, with good support in a holistic way, is an incredibly positive journey. But what we've seen over the last 15 years is an explosion in numbers of gender-questioning people. So in the Tavistock theory, we're seeing 50 patients a year in 2010. Mm-hmm. By 2023, it was 3,000 referrals.
So a huge increase, as you say.
Massive increase and a change in the demographics. So a big surge in the number of people assigned female at birth looking to transition to male.
Why, can you tell me, is the CAS report recommending extreme care then before anyone under the age of 25 transitions?
Because when you see a pattern of presentation change as dramatically as we've seen this change over the last 15 years, you have to go, hold on, is this something new and different? So we need to be careful. When you are making decisions about starting treatment and having surgeries that have lifelong implications at the age of 16, 18, 22, you're not necessarily fully confident in the decision you're making. You might be 100% sure at that moment in time, but our neurobiological development isn't complete really until your mid-20s, which is why that age has been suggested. And what has been seen over the last 15 years is the association with neurodiversity. And if you have neurodiversity, you might go through your physical puberty at the age of 13, but orientation, sexuality, decisions about family, they don't mature for at least a decade. So one has to be careful.
Is that partly as well why this report is recommending the ending of prescription drugs to under-18s as well?
I think what's happened over the last 10 to 15 years is prescription of puberty blockers has become the default. So people who are gender questioning are starting on puberty blockers rather than exploring the gender in a bit more detail, looking at the comorbid conditions that they may have and teasing through those. So I think a ban on blockers is never the right thing, but it should become the default that you explore this in a holistic way before making that big decision.
Okay.
And for many, that they won't be fully able, ready for that decision until their mid-20s.
Can I ask you to stay with me, Professor Donal O'Shea, for a second? I want to bring into the conversation at this point Dr. Chris Noon, who's a lecturer in the School of Psychology at the University of Galway and a board member of the LGBT Federation. Dr. Chris Noon, you're very welcome to the programme as well.
Thanks, Cormac. Thanks for having me on.
Can I ask you, first of all, how you think the healthcare system, we heard from the HSE in their statement there, how you think the healthcare system for trans people should work?
Sure. I think the healthcare system for trans people should work the same way the healthcare system works for everybody, on an informed consent basis. It should be a conversation between the trans person and their healthcare provider, their doctor, where all of the options are discussed. And it may include or it may not include psychological support. It may or may not include hormone therapy, and it may or may not include surgery. There's no one way of being trans, and there's no one way of providing trans healthcare. But trying to put up barriers to healthcare, we know that that has negative outcomes in many ways.
So what do you make then, Chris, of the CAS review and the CAS report? And they cite a lack of research and remarkably weak evidence on medical interventions in a UK setting.
Sure. Well, I mean, I welcome the CAS report's intentions. I welcome that it emphasises an evidence-based approach to healthcare. That's commendable. But its methods for collating all of the evidence fall far short of the standard practices for collating evidence to inform healthcare. And its own recommendations, indeed, are not evidence-based. So, for example, Professor Shea described the approach as comprehensive, but they ignored 48% of the studies on puberty blockers. So that's not a very comprehensive approach, and their justification for doing that doesn't stand up to international standards for doing this kind of work.
They did say in the reports that some of the papers, the research papers that were put forward in support of some arguments were not of high quality or were insufficient in terms of evidence.
Yeah, and a major factor for why they deemed those studies to be of low quality was because they were using an approach to judge quality that is usually used for medicines, for a vaccine or a paracetamol or something like that, that you can actually create a placebo version of, a version that you don't realize that whether you're getting the real one or not. Mm-hmm. That's called blinding. They marked all of these studies down for not being blinded. And it's actually impossible to actually blind these kinds of drugs, because you obviously can notice whether or not the process of puberty is progressing. So they applied standards that were not not suitable for this area of research.
Okay, so you're not.
I spoke to the leading researcher in evidence synthesis in Ireland today, and he said that the methods of their approaches to synthesizing the evidence were not up to scratch.
Okay, so you're not happy with the research basis, say. As someone then who's researched healthcare for trans people, Chris, one of the areas in the CAS report you take issue with, I'm told, is the recommendation of extreme care in treating those under 25. Why?
Well, care is always important in providing healthcare, but choosing the arbitrary age of 25 for only this type of healthcare is not supported by evidence. It's not something that we expect any other type of healthcare access to depend on, the age 25. We don't ask anyone else to be over 25 to get any type of healthcare. And there's no reason why we know that people generally, there's lots of evidence that people are actually aware of their gender identity at a much, much earlier age than that. What we also know is that delaying care is known to be associated with worsening mental health outcomes. Mm-hmm. So if we implement a recommendation that specifically delays care until the age of 25, we're actually going to cause more harm than benefit. And healthcare decisions are about avoiding harm and maximising benefit.
And would you then place any age on it?
No, we have already an age of consent for healthcare. It's 18.
Okay, can I go back to Donal O'Shea on some of those points, that the age of 25 chosen is arbitrary?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at adolescent medicine is a relatively new field, and we've only just appointed one of our first adolescent physicians in Ireland. And if you look at the US model, the adolescent and young adult clinics actually run up to the age of 29, because in the States they think, well, actually, the decisions you're making about treatment in the setting of oncology, for example, which will impact on fertility and which will impact on long-term health, that actually there is that age group where your decision making is different and needs to be explored in a bit more detail. If you link with that the link with neurodiversity and a high percentage of patients who are gender questioning, that adds the need because of that decade of delay in the neurobiological development and sense of attraction and orientation, etc. So it's that greater care and caution is needed before you make irreversible decisions. And one of the tenets of medicine is that the first rule is to do no harm.
What about Chris's point that if you delay, you can cause mental health harm?
There is no doubt that getting the timing right for the correct individual, for each individual, is the challenge. And Hilary Cass is clear. We don't know what right is. In this space, we need to generate the evidence. We need better quality evidence. She didn't get access to all the evidence she wanted for this report, which is amazing. There were people withholding some evidence from her. So I think we know what wrong is. So the Tavistock are establishing a detransitioning pathway. You have to acknowledge that we're not getting it right in the current space of widespread use of blockers. Mm-hmm. So let's be careful and participate in generating the evidence. And that's exactly what the Carl Neff, my colleague, has been appointed the national lead for developing this model of care. And we will link with Hilary Cass and the study they're planning to do. It will be a difficult study for the reasons that Chris mentioned.
Mm-hmm. And I'll go back to Chris in just a second. But the points, let me ask you to address some of the points that he said he made about research, and that some studies were disregarded by Hilary Cass because they weren't blind studies, let's say. And so on, and they could have supported the types of treatments that are now being taken away in terms of this suite of treatments being available. So yeah. What do you make of that?
Well, it's a 380-page report that was published this morning. I haven't read it completely. So I would need to look at that. Hilary Cass is a leading clinician within the UK health system, and I would be surprised if she excluded any good quality research in this, because she has put the last 3 years of her professional life into seeing both sides of this argument and trying to come up with a pathway forward that we will be supporting.
Can I bring you back in, Chris? And let me read you, first of all, a line or two from a statement we've got from the HSE, and I might ask you a question based on it. A new clinical programme for gender healthcare is being initiated within the HSE, they say, and over the next 2 years, we'll develop an updated clinical model of care for gender healthcare services. The work will be informed by the best evidence on clinical care for individuals who express gender incongruence or dysphoria, and emerging and evolving international evidence, including the just published CAS report, will be reviewed as part of this work. Would you accept that the HSE seems, based on that anyway, quite open-minded to the evolution of evidence, the emerging evidence, and the best evidence internationally?
Yeah, I welcome that. I think that's that's a good approach. And it's important that they don't rest on the CAS report alone, because as I've pointed out, it excludes a lot of evidence. It should also include the evidence gathered by the likes of the American Psychological Association and the American Medical Association, who have both passed resolutions in favor of gender affirmative care. And it should also include the research that in as holistic a way as possible. So looking at physical and mental health outcomes and harms. And I am seeing the latest reviews of the evidence showing that, as we heard in the HSE statement earlier, very few young people, I mean, Professor O'Shea just said that there's widespread use of puberty blockers, but on the news that I heard at 6, there are less than 10 patients using it in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. And we read that, and, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, in summary, I totally welcome this holistic approach the HSE are taking, a careful approach to developing the right kind of services, and I hope that they also consider the informed consent model and the evidence that's emerging around that.
Okay, well, thank you very much indeed. Thanks to both of you for joining us on the programme this evening. Dr. Chris Noone, who's lecturer in psychology in the University of Galway, and Professor Donal O'Shea, thank you as well.